out clubs, protecting my turf, tossing her over my shoulder and claiming mine. But she's not mine. I'm not hers. And I have kids asleep back in Kensington. I have a nanny to pay gobs of pounds to. That's my element. That's where I belong. I don't have my feet in this clubbing, partying, no-kids world. Hell, perhaps it's fitting that Charlie's going to be living here half the time. I'm the interloper in his world. Mine is back in a hotel suite. I wave goodbye, march up the block, and catch a cab once I'm away from all of them. As I buckle in, a text flashes at me from Louise, telling me the kids are sound asleep and have been for a few hours. Sleep sounds impossible. I'm not the least bit tired, thanks to the chime change, and I'm not the least bit relaxed, thanks to Graham and his fucking I-want-to-hear-about-mini-golf bit. Wanker. Fucking wanker. But he's a wanker with Piper at the club. He's likely slinking an arm around her waist, buying her a cocktail, telling her he'll take her to a quaint little bookshop tomorrow, then go grab a spot of tea, speaking in that accent that makes women drop their panties. My muscles bunch as images keep relentlessly taunting me. Staring out the window, I have half a mind to stop the car and walk the rest of the way back to burn off this frustration. But I need to do more than walk. I text Louise that I'd love to hit the hotel gym if she's still willing to stay. She says she'd be thrilled. When I reach the suite, I say a quick hello, then stop in the kids' adjoining room where I drop kisses onto their foreheads. I pause for a moment, savoring the quiet, the sweet, sleepy faces. Neither one of my babies stirs, and in moments like these, I'm home. Completely home. Love you, I whisper. So much. I change quickly in my room and tell Louise I'll be back in an hour and a half. She waves me off.
Take your time, Mr. Nolan. I'm going to pop open my laptop and do some more work on my thesis. That's what I did when your little darlings fell asleep. It's so much quieter here than at my flat.
Great. Good luck with it. I head downstairs for a workout where I crank up the volume on my playlist and prepare to pound out miles on the treadmill to AC/DC, since that's my mood at the moment. I zoom in on the tunes, hoping they'll erase whatever's happening at the club. Soon enough, I'm in the zone, running in place, my brain bathed in headbanging music. Eventually, I'm no longer thinking of anything but the burn in my legs and the pounding of my heart. When I return, Louise is conked out on the couch, her laptop open on the coffee table. I scratch my jaw. Do I wake her up, let her snooze? I turn down the volume on my phone so a sharp alarm or loud ring doesn't wake the kids. I park my hands on my hips, assessing the situation. I can't sleep with the nanny on the couch. That's strange. But I'm not sure it's my place to go rustle her either. Anna would have done that. But it seems like something the mom would do, not the dad. Deciding to go about my business and hope the ambient noise rouses Louise, I check on the kids once more, unzip my suitcase loudly to grab some lounge pants and a t-shirt, and then peer into the suite's living room again. Louise is still snoozing. Impressive. And time for me to kick things up a notch. Let's see if the noise of a shower does the trick. 15 minutes later, I'm freshly cleaned and she's deeper into the land of Nod. She's tugged the blanket off the back of the sofa and is snuggled under it, breathing steady and even. Look, I know how to be loud. I know how to wake up anyone, but I don't know jack about Louise. I don't want to scare the hell out of her. Maybe she desperately needs her sleep. She did say it was quieter here than at her flat. Still, I try. Louise, I whisper from a foot away. She doesn't move. I draw a deep breath, then gently shake her shoulder. She flips over to her stomach, mumbling something that sounds like,
I'll finish the Austin essay in the morning.
All right, let's give it the old college try. Well, not that. The college try would have entailed dumping ice on a buddy or blasting a foghorn in his ear. Because, well, we were assholes. One more nudge.
Bronte. The Bronte essay,
she mutters, and I thought law school was brutal. Bewildered, I grab the card key, snag my phone, and step into the hall to call my sister and ask her advice. Before I can dial, I spot a notification. A text that arrived 20 minutes ago. From Piper. My jaw ticks. She better not be telling me she's having a great time with Graham, cheery old chap and fan of shitty sports.
Piper. Apparently, Jessica and Charlie can't club for long either. They're done, and I'm on my way back. LOL.
Her name on my phone makes my chest light up and pisses me off, too. I reply, Zach. Where's Graham?
I don't know.
He's not with you?
Let me look around and check. Hold on.
I sigh heavily. Doesn't she know I'm not in the mood? I tap a short message. Piper.
Wait. I found him. In the inside pocket of my purse.
Does that mean he's with you?
Yes, he's eating a cracker that was in my clutch. Hungry little guy.
Where are you for real?
What's got into your bonnet? Is this the Inquisition? I'm in my room. Jessica and Charlie gave me a bottle of champagne, so I'm having a glass and watching The Crown. Anything else you want to know, counselor? Or has the cross-examination ended?
I drag a hand through my hair and slump against the wall. What the hell am I doing? I write to her. The sitter fell asleep in my room. I'm standing in the hallway. I have no clue what to do. I can't sleep in the next room with the sitter on the couch.
You can't.
I can't.
So, what then?
I sink down to the floor, parking myself on the carpeted hallway. My phone clutched in my hand, her message blinking at me. It's like a neon sign at the end of a road, beckoning. But what's my answer? The chug of the elevator hits my ears, and I snap my gaze in its direction. A couple stumbles out, laughing, touching, heading to their room. The man slides his key card in the lock. The woman's arm is wrapped around him. In seconds, they're in the room, and the hall is empty again. I lower my head, picturing what I want, what I don't want, what I might be able to have. I send a text. Chapter 18. Once you decide, you just go. With the sent message to Louise on my phone. I stepped out, but I'm in the hotel. Text or call when you wake up and I'll be right back. I head upstairs, skipping the elevator, taking the steps two by two. I have energy to spare. I reach her floor, find her room, and rap loudly on the door. Stuffing my hands in my pockets, I wait. She doesn't answer right away. I shove a hand through my still wet hair, glad I showered. My stomach churns. With nerves? With anticipation? I'm not sure. Maybe it's with latent annoyance. A clinking sound ends the silence. Metal against metal. The safety lock undone. My pulse spikes. I'm on high alert. The door creaks open an inch, then she yanks it open more.
Hey?
It's more than a whisper. It's a curiosity. In that one syllable, she's asking why I'm here. Of course she's asking. She's a woman asking an unspoken question after midnight. I want to answer, but my throat is dry. She's not in her black dress anymore. My mind goes haywire as I drink in her attire. Or rather, the lack thereof. A strappy black camisole clings to her chest, and sleep shorts hug her hips. So much exposed skin. So much territory to explore, to taste. Does she still smell like orange blossoms, or has it faded? Desire rips through my body, white hot, vibrating in every molecule, in every cell. I'm shaking with lust. Hey, I barely recognize my own voice. I barely know what to say or do. But maybe she can read a million things into that one word. Maybe she can translate what I've said into what I'm not saying. You. I'm here for you. To grab her and crush a kiss to her lips. To push her against the wall and strip her to nothing. To take her. Because I want her so fucking much. And it's more than a physical need. It goes deeper, farther than I expected. Seconds pass in silence, and I'm so parched I can't talk. She puts me out of my misery.
I'm guessing you're dying to know who's sleeping with the prince?
I blink. Is she speaking Turkish? What?
The crown? I presume you couldn't resist the idea of watching the crown and having champagne?
She's right on one count. Exactly, I say, staring at her face, then letting my gaze travel up and down her body. I'm transparent. My thoughts are written in my eyes. I couldn't resist. Her breath seems to hitch.
Come in, then.
I cross the threshold, letting the door fall shut behind me. Her room is smaller than mine, a room for one. The bed is made pristinely, the duvet a crisp white cover. Past the bed, a navy blue couch sits against the wall, a coffee table in front of it. Her suitcase is tucked neatly by the closet, unzipped but not open. On the nightstand is her phone and an e-reader. There are no outfits strewn everywhere, no cords to navigate around. You're neat, I remark. Instantly, I want to smack myself upside the head. You're neat? Jesus Christ, how long has it been, man, since you talked to a woman you wanted? But I know the answer to that. Too long.
Confession, I make my bed in the morning.
In a hotel? Maybe she is speaking Turkish. She nods sheepishly.
You do know they have people who do that.
With a shrug, she wanders to the couch and flops down.
I don't like messes. Don't like looking at them. They ruin my mojo.
She lifts her glass, her eyebrows rising too. An invitation. Maybe she knows I'm a mess right now. Maybe she's trying to sort me out. I follow her. Do I sit near the armrest or close to the middle? Why the hell am I stuck in this morass of indecision? I don't waffle. I don't hem and haw. But tonight, evidently, figuring out where to sit is hard. I split the difference as she pours champagne into a bathroom glass. I take it. Nice flute. She winks.
Only the classiest for me.
I raise my glass. What are we toasting to? She tucks her feet underneath her.
You tell me, Zach.
And like that, the ball is in my court. She's asking me what's going on, why I'm here, what I want. To feel again. Instead, I toast to the truth. To Graham not being here. Rolling her eyes, she clinks, and we drink. She's quiet, and I guess that means it's still my turn. And I still need to know if she's taking a tour with Graham. So did he hit on you? She runs her finger along the rim of the glass.
Is that why you're here? To inquire about Graham's intentions? I thought it was to watch the crown.
I glance at the screen. I bet that queen asked for what she wanted. My lips quirk up. Never have I ever come here to watch the crown. Her eyes widen and she stares pointedly at my glass. I don't take a drink. She lifts a brow, her brown eyes twinkling with mischief, with a "so this is how it goes" kind of spark.
Never have I ever gone to a woman's room to inquire about a man I'm jealous of.
I laugh. Busted. I drink and it tastes spectacular. The best swallow of champagne ever. It tastes like the truth, like a weight lifting. It tastes like a chance. And it feels like fun, something I want more of, something I like a whole hell of a lot with her. So I keep it up. Never have I ever made plans with an English bloke to go on a tour of bookshops and other stupid shit. She cracks up, clutching her glass resolutely.
Well played.
So you're not going with him?
Did I not just answer that?
Did you want to?
I already said I'm not going with him. Why are you asking if I wanted to?
Because I want to know.
Then shouldn't you ask your question in the form of the game?
She keeps me on my toes. You're right, I should. I assemble the words carefully in my head first. Never have I ever turned Graham down because I have zero, not a zilch, interest in him, rather than because it would be a bad idea to have a fling with him. The look she gives me reminds me of a woman lazily swinging in a hammock, biting into an apple, a satisfied grin on her face. I wait several interminable seconds that last for hours. She takes her time, quirking up her lips as if she's considering all facets of the question. A long sigh falls from her lips, then a hum.
Well, let's see.
Piper, let a woman answer. I sweep my arm out. The floor is yours. She taps her bottom lip.
So you're asking if I'm attracted to Graham, and if it was difficult to turn him down?
Yes, I bite out. She raises the glass halfway.
Let me think. Never have I ever turned Graham down.
I groan, and she finishes the thought.
Because I'm not attracted to him.
She smirks, lifts the glass, and takes a fabulously large gulp. Her nose crinkles.
Ooh, that tickled.
She sets down the glass, rubs her palms.
But now it's my turn.
Bring it on, I say, more cocky than I expected. But then this is my turf. Back and forth, tete-a-tete. We're in the ring boxing, and this is what we do. She taps her chin.
What to ask?
I make a sound like a ticking clock.
Oh, hush, there's no time limit.
She stares at the window, then at me, studying my face. She adjusts herself, sitting a little higher. My eyes stray to her chest, to her perky breasts, and I stifle a moan. Raising my gaze, I catalog her glossy lips, her soulful eyes, her simple elegance. She inches a tad closer, as if she's about to taunt me. Taunted is not what I feel. Exponentially more aroused is more like it. I'm not sure how that's possible, but there it is. It's happening. My skin sizzles as she moves nearer. She speaks.
Never have I ever come to a woman's room after midnight for reasons other than champagne and Netflix.
That's so easy. In fact, it's so easy I make it clear. Obviously, I'm not here for the bubbly or the show. I take a long drink, keeping my eyes on her the whole time. When I lower my glass, I kick the game up a notch to the next level. Never have I ever wanted this guy to come to my room. Her lips part slightly. She says nothing. She raises her glass, takes a drink. I'm so buzzed, and it's not from the liquor. I've barely had any. I'm tipsy on her. I'm intoxicated with anticipation. And I want to get drunk on this night, this woman, and all the possibilities. She starts to speak, but I raise a hand, stopping her. Let me go again.
Okay.
Her voice is scratchy, a little nervous. But I need another turn. I'm the one who appeared at her door. I'm the one who needs to go first, to show my hand. I lift my glass, never taking my gaze from hers. Never have I ever wanted to kiss this woman on the plane, in the elevator, in the cab. Her eyes spark, flecks of desire dancing across the irises. I push on, hogging the turn, taking all the turns because I have to. Because I'm a jack-in-the-box wound so damn tight, and I have been for months. These last few days with her have been some of the best I've had in ages, and even though I shouldn't do this, even though I shouldn't be here, I am. Ready for what comes next, damn the risks. Never have I ever wanted to know how you taste, if you smell as good when I kiss your skin as I imagine you do. Never have I ever come to your room after midnight because I couldn't get you out of my head. She gasps, blinking, then a shudder seems to run through her.
Really?
Nodding, I finish my glass and set it down. I take hers and put it on the table, then thread my hand in her hair. Get your lips on mine. I need to taste you.
Oh, God,
she whispers. We crash into each other, two tigers fearlessly tumbling. I yank her close and claim her mouth, my thoughts going hazy as I kiss her deeply and deeper still. I'm not interested in soft, whispery kisses. I'm hungry, I'm downright starved, and she's the only thing that can satisfy me. She kisses exactly how I imagined, because, oh hell, have I ever imagined this. She's fiery and fierce, all heat and need. Her hands curl around my head, through my hair, and she kisses me hard, so damn hard it blurs out the world. It erases everything but this room and her and my aching desire to have her. Dropping my hands, I grab her hips and tug her onto my lap so she's straddling me. In lounge pants and sleep shorts, little is left to the imagination. My intentions are wildly clear and incredibly loud. She sinks down against my hard-on, and I groan, a sound that's equal parts relief and pent-up desire. I'm not satisfied, not in the least. I need so much more. I need more than this. But I will take this gladly. Oh, so fucking gladly. Grabbing her ass, I squeeze, moving her against my hard-as-stone dick. She breaks the kiss, letting her head fall back, her hair spilling behind her. She lets out a carnal cry, a greedy yes that lasts for days. My cock jerks against her as she rubs herself on me, her hips swiveling and grinding. The sight of her like that, chasing her pleasure already, sets my chest to flames. I grab her face, pulling her back to my mouth. "Kiss me again. Kiss me while you ride me," I murmur. She slams her lips to mine, and we kiss like the world is burning behind us, like it's spiraling away to ash, and this is the last thing we'll do. Our teeth click, and I love the roughness, love the sloppiness. My tongue skates over hers, and I bite her lip, nibbling, and she yelps, but then it turns into a long, lingering moan that lasts for fantastic, lingering seconds. "Zach." My name on her lips is the sexiest thing I've ever heard. It unravels me. It unlocks me. I need to be inside her now. I don't want her coming on my lap like we're in high school. I don't want child's play. I want the real thing. Her wetness against my hardness. I break the kiss. "Bed, now, I need to be inside you." Then reality slams into me. "Shit, fuck, hell." Instantly, she stops moving. "What's wrong?" "I don't have a condom. Do you?" "Wait, I bet the hotel does. I can call the concierge." Even though the wait for him to bring one feels like it would be an eternity in hell, a smile sneaks across her face.
"I'm on protection, and I'm safe, clean."
Ah, glorious words. Beautiful, glorious, incredible words. I can fuck her without barriers. "Good, because I hate condoms. Also, I'm safe too," I tell her. She scoots off, and I stand, removing my shirt as I walk to the bed. She stares at me.
"Whoa."
I stop before I toss my shirt to the floor. "Whoa what?"
"Your chest, your abs, your stomach. Can I just spend the night licking you?"
Laughing, I drop the shirt, step closer to her, and fiddle with the hem of her cami. "Love the sound of that, but no, I need to be inside you, need to feel you." I lower my face to her neck, flicking my tongue up the column of her throat, inhaling her citrus scent. Yes, it's everywhere, and it drives me even wilder than it did in the cab, as I make my way up to her ear. She trembles while I kiss her neck, nibble on her earlobe. "Need to fuck you, Piper. I need it so much."
"Me too."
She runs her fingers up and down my chest, tracing the grooves in my abs. She bites her lip, looking mesmerized. I feel mesmerized. By her, by this night, by her touch. I haven't been touched in so long. Haven't wanted it, haven't craved it. Till her. Now all I want is this electricity, this crackling energy. It flickers and sparks like a current that won't stop. I pull off her cami, my hands cupping her breasts, kneading them before my fingers travel down to her shorts and strip them off. They fall to the floor, and she's naked, and it's breathtaking. "You're so damn sexy," I rasp as I tuck my thumbs in the waistband of my pants and push them down, my cock announcing how very happy it is to be free of clothes and standing in front of its goal. She shakes her head.
"No, you are."
I lift a brow. "You're gorgeous."
"Just fuck me,"
she says, and I'm not going to deny either of us. She falls down on the bed, scoots back to the pillows, and I crawl up, savoring every single second. She settles and reaches down, making grabby hands. With a grin, I move closer so she can touch me like she wants. Like I want. She wraps a hand around me and I'm lost. I'm simply lost in the extraordinary feel. Her eyes float closed as she touches me, and mine do too. For a moment, maybe more, my mind goes blank. I give in to the sheer ecstasy, to the incredible feeling of intimacy, of hands exploring bodies, of desire playing the lead role, of being human once more, of being alive. It's everything I didn't know I was missing. It's everything I now have to have. Opening my eyes, I gently swat her hand away. Spread your legs for me. She lets her knees fall open, and heat blasts through me as I stare at her, so wet, so ready. I'm a supernova, and I'm not even inside her. I have to warn her. As I settle between her legs, rubbing the head of my cock against her heat, I groan, but still manage to get a word out. Piper, she arches against me, pleading with her body.
Yes,
she sounds as desperate as I feel. It's been a while. I say, my voice low, bare truth on my tongue. A long while. She pushes up on her elbows, lifts a hand, cups my cheek.
Then make it fast and good, because I feel like I could come in seconds.
I push into her, my eyes rolling back in my head at that first decadent feel of her heat. I can't finish the sentence.
Incredible.
She murmurs, and I slide inside, all the way. I am engulfed in her, and it's spectacular. A blast of pleasure shoots down my spine, a comet appearing from out of nowhere in the night sky.
Need a moment,
I grunt, bracing myself on my palms, looking away from her face.
Take your time, I'll be here, just begging to come.
She wriggles against me, and I laugh. And that does the trick. That's enough for me to return my focus to her, to direct all my attention on this woman beneath me, wanting me, needing me. I'm a shark. I'm tough as nails. I'm made of steel. I can hold off an orgasm to pleasure her first. You better believe I can. I pace myself, going slow at first, taking my time as I listen to her cues, her sounds, her murmurs. She's not quiet. She's wonderfully noisy, her moans and groans a fantastic soundtrack. As she lets out a series of, oh God, yes, like that, it's not hard to discover her rhythm, because she knows what she wants. She knows what she needs. She tells me. I shouldn't be surprised at all. Piper has always spoken her mind. I'm not shocked when she shifts a little, turning slightly to the side and says,
one of us is going to need to play with my clit.
I smirk.
I volunteer as tribute.
Good, get tributing.
Adjusting myself so my weight is on my left arm, I slide my other arm between us, running my thumb across the swollen rise of her clit. Her reaction is instantaneous, making me feel like a king as she screams.
Yes, that. Oh, God.
Her noises turn the dial in me up to 10, to 100, to 100 million. But I grit my teeth, stroking her clit, fucking her hard, fighting off my own release. Her hands travel down my back, sliding over my hot skin till she grabs my ass, squeezing, parting her legs, wrapping them tighter around me, making her intentions clear. She intends to come and to come hard. And I have one job, to finish the motherfucking job. We are a blur of bodies, of skin, of sound. I stroke and thrust, and she rocks and grinds. Pleasure curls inside me, lust threatening to overtake my brain, my entire being. But she's a merciful woman, and an honest one too, because she's trembling, reaching the edge quickly like she said she would, putting me out of my misery. Her mouth forms an O, and then she's quiet, blissfully silent before she announces to the whole hotel, no, make that this entire city, that she's coming. With Superman-level strength, I stave off my own release for a few more seconds so I can watch her, so I can memorize how she looks as her eyes squeeze shut, her face tenses and she shudders, writhing beneath me as my name and God's name fill my ears. I let go at last as the orgasm wins the battle, and I happily surrender to it. The world fades to black. This, yes, everything. A stark and terrifying awareness hits me. This feels like everything I didn't know I was missing.
Chapter 19. Well, that was delightful. He arches a brow. Delightful? That was delightful. Sighing contentedly, I stretch my arms above my head and lift a brow. What's wrong with delightful? He growls. Delightful is for a stroll through a garden. Remaining deadpan, I ask. How would you describe it then? Epic. That was mind-blowingly epic. Not gonna lie. Inside, I'm glowing at that description. But toying with him is too fun. Epic? Do we still say epic? I thought that was out of vogue. He huffs, his nostrils flaring. Woman, is now the time to debate trends in popular colloquialisms? You mean it's not the time when your machismo is at stake? I can't resist. He props himself up on his elbow. I'm pretty sure no one says machismo anymore. I quirk up my lips. I guess you're right. Machismo is for the history books. He rolls his eyes. All right, time to go. He pushes up, and I grab his arm. His toned, firm arm. He wasn't kidding when he said he spent time working out. And I'm not kidding when I say praise the Lord for his devotion to barbells and flash him a smile. Delightful was an understatement. He stops, stares at me. I thought so. Did you now? I counter. His eyes drift to my hand on his arm. Then they roam up and down my naked body. For a moment, it hits me. I'm naked with Zach Nolan. We're fire and ice. We've shot arrows and hissed at each other. We're champions in the sport of eye-rolling and lobbing clever invectives. I should be freaking out. I should be trying to wake myself from a dream because no way do we screw in real life. But this is real. And real life is fabulous in this moment. Especially as he eats me up with his eyes, making me shiver. My response to his dirty gaze does not go unnoticed. He looks back at me with his standard intensity, speaking with his tough, no-nonsense tone. I believe what you meant to say was, never have I ever come so hard. Is that right? I pretend to lift a glass and to down it. That is exactly what I meant to say. Yep. This is real. This is us. We still have our arrows and quivers, only they've changed. They're not as barbed. They're fun and fiery. He laughs, then runs a hand down my stomach. The feel of his touch turns me to jelly, and I was already a weak-kneed mess of hormones. But then he swings his legs over the side of the bed and says, "Let me clean you up." I'm no longer a mess of lust. I'm a puddle of swoon. It's embarrassing, completely embarrassing, how much the sweetness of the gesture hooks into my heart. I should shove off the bed, wave a hand, and march to the bathroom to do it myself. But I don't. I lie here, waiting, savoring the after effects that still radiate through my body. The lingering glow from the way he made me climb the mountain, then soar off the other side. Who cares if epic is out of fashion? That was epic. He returns with a warm washcloth, gently sliding it between my legs. I close my eyes, because the tenderness is nearly too much. I don't know how to handle this, Zach. This side of him is too endearing, too wonderful. I could fall for this side of him, The passionate lover is a tender lover, too. And I know that because we're not fire and ice anymore. And we haven't been for a while. But I don't know what that makes us other than something else, something unnamed. Maybe even unknown. He returns to the bathroom, then joins me again, stretched out in the bed. So, that was indeed delightful, he says dryly. Yes, this. I can do this. I open my eyes and meet his gaze. There's that teasing glint in his blue eyes. There's the twinkle. I understand what to do with this sack so much more than the kind, gentle one. Fine, I grumble. It was better than delightful. It was... I pause, searching for another adjective to needle him with. Lovely. Laughing, he parks his hands behind his head. Look, you can call it lovely. You can call it delightful. I'm just patting myself on the back for getting you there first. That was literally my only goal. I flash back to those seconds before he entered me, when pure vulnerability crossed his eyes, when he said, "It's been a while." In that phrase, I heard everything, understood everything. He hasn't been with anyone else since his wife died. I'm his first. Part of me doesn't know how to manage the weight of being his first after her, after a love like that, a life like that. Another part of me is doing a hula dance. Me. He chose me. The everything fruit. The girl down the hall. The girl he spars with. The vulnerable part of me is happy. Happier than I imagined I'd be. But trying to dig into why this delights me, yes, this knowledge is delightful, requires an excavation that isn't welcome. This was sex, right? An itch. We scratched it. I keep the mood light since he didn't come here for a heavy talk, nor do I want one. I'd say you achieved your goal. Also, you take direction extraordinarily well. He blows on his fingernails. Feel free to give me any more you like. For instance, lick harder, suck my clit, lick my pussy, fuck me with your fingers. My jaw drops at his unexpected dirty mouth. Zach Nolan, you're filthy. He shrugs unapologetically. I'm just saying, I'm up for it. You saying any of the above. Me taking your direction. I tremble, my body betraying me. I want to give him all those directions. I want him to take them to town and light me up again. His eyes sparkle. Seems you might like that, too. Any of the above? I purse my lips. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time admitting that I want more. Maybe because I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what's changed. If this was a one-time thing or if it could be something more. I don't know what I want it to be. But it can't be anything more, a voice reminds me. My attention needs to be on my goals. My sister, her baby, my job, Jessica's wedding. I can't tango with Zach because... What if it ends badly? I can't bring that kind of negative energy on Jessica. And of course it would end badly. We are too much up in each other's businesses and lives. We have our friends and this wedding and... Hey, when I told you that you were sexy and gorgeous, why did you say, no, you are? It's like you were saying you weren't. I cringe, wishing he'd forgotten that. Those types of compliments are hard for me to hear. I don't know how they can be true. I was just saying you were, I answer, aiming for misdirection. I'm a magician. Now you see it, now you don't. He looks through the illusion, pushing on. Don't you realize how gorgeous you are? I turn to face him, propping my head in my hand. Might as well level with him. Look, thank you. But you don't need to say that to get me in bed again. A laugh seems to burst from his throat. What? Do you think it was a line the first time? Give me more credit. I shake my head. I'm not saying it was a line. I'm saying don't feel obligated. Like you thought I felt obligated after the dinner in New York? Why are you worried about obligations? In my head, I answer, because I don't know how to handle them. Because I don't want you to feel like I'm one of yours. Because I don't know how to manage my feelings if I am. Because a part of me wants to be your obligation. But that's not the core issue. I key in on the question, answering matter-of-factly because this is a black-and-white truth for me, a cornerstone of who I am, what I do. I'm not gorgeous, and I know it. If anything, I'm cute. I'm not stunning. I'm not beautiful. I'm not even pretty. But he sputters. I raise a hand to stop him. And I'm 100% okay with that. Truly, I am. I don't suffer from low self-esteem. My esteem is just fine. Trust me, I think I'm awesome and I'm good with how I look. He furrows his brow. How you look? How do you think you look? I'm not the pretty girl, I'm the friend. I'm the wing woman. That's who I've been. I blend in with my straight nose and brown eyes and standard issue hair. I'm cute, that's all. I'm fine with cute. He inches closer, running a finger across my top lip. With your pretty pink lips that drive me crazy when you slide gloss on them? His hand travels down to my breasts. With these perky breasts and rosy nipples that fit just right in my hand and feel spectacular? I shiver from his touch. He brushes his fingers over my hair. With these strands I want to run my fingers through? Zach, I say, trying to shush him. But I'm blushing. I'm getting soft. I've got a liquid center from his praise. You don't have to say that. He pushes up, straddles me, pins my arms by my sides. His eyes are a laser beam. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to do anything. You know me well enough to know I would never say anything just to say it. So let me say this. You're fucking sexy. Deal with it. You dress in that leather skirt that shows off toned thighs and makes me think filthy thoughts. You wear heels and I imagine those legs wrapped around my neck. You put on that orange lotion or potion or whatever it is and I'm a lost cause. I'm a dog panting, begging for a treat. That's quite a list. My smile takes over my face and spreads through my whole being. You and your lists. See, you might think you're the wing woman, but the wing woman does something to me. He lowers his hips, pressing his cock against me, thick and hard. You're gorgeous. I can't stop looking at you. And I want you again, Piper. I want you too, I whisper. And it feels like I've cracked open my chest. That I'm baring my naked soul by saying that. Maybe I am. His lips curve up, telling me that was the only response he wanted. And it eases the tension in my heart, the tight knot of worry. He lowers his face near mine, as if he's about to kiss me, then dodges my mouth. Instead, he runs his nose along my neck, inhaling, a long, deliberate sniff. Don't you realize that for the last few months when I've looked at you, I've been undressing you? When a man you've sparred with whispers sweet, dirty nothings, it's thoroughly disarming. I have no barbs to toss back at him, nor do I want to. Still, I'm not entirely sure how to take all these compliments, other than with a quiet, thank you. But my body is sure. Tingles spread from my head to my toes. So I focus on the physical. I glance down, lowering my voice suggestively. I'm still undressed. You are. And I'm not a one-and-done kind of man. So what else are you going to do? He silences me with a soft kiss. I nearly die from the tenderness, from the sweet, slow, and lazy way his tongue explores my mouth. Then my neck, my breasts, my belly. He makes his way down my body, turning me to a boneless woman with every flick of his tongue, every press of his mouth, till he's there, right there where I want him. He groans as he tastes me. I do too, my hips shooting up, and I zero in on the sensations, the toe-tingling, knee-melting sensations, as he goes down on me like he's kissing me. He's not one of those painters, the guys who work a straight line up and down, up and down. No, Zach is caressing me with his mouth, devouring me with his lips, and claiming me. Pleasure coils in my body, tightening and circling, till it climbs higher and higher, and I'm close, so damn close. Then the switch flips, and I'm falling, flying, coming undone. The sheer bliss blots out my worries about what's next, where we go, what we do. Until the morning, when he bolts out of bed, clutching his phone, cursing as he tugs on his pants, and says he has to go.
Chapter 20. My kids are pretty well adjusted. They've dealt with some shit no kids should have to face, but they've come out on the other side. Lucy, being older, bore the brunt of Anna's illness and her death. But with honesty, love, and a father who was there for her every single day, every single night, she's made it through, and she's one hell of a happy, balanced child. Henry's an easier one. He was 5 when he lost his mom. Grief for him was different. It was sharp and immediate and gone quickly. He probably doesn't remember many details about Anna. While snapshots of her might exist in his head, they're likely blurry and, frankly, fading fast. But he knows me. He's used to me. I'm his person, his steady, his rock. And every morning, the first thing he does when he gets out of bed is pee, brush his teeth, then give me a hug.
"Good morning, Daddy,"
he'll say. "Good morning, little man." It's a routine, nothing special. A completely average, everyday routine. But it's his, and it's mine, and it's ours. We've done it for the last 2 years and never missed it once. He's crying today. I scoop him up into my arms the second I push open the door to the hotel room. Like a koala, he wraps his arms and legs around me, clinging fiercely. A bright English voice floats over the sound of sniffles.
"See, I told you Daddy would be back in a hurry. All better now, yeah?"
Louise's cheery tone is a cover-up. "I'm here," I whisper to Henry, patting his back, soothing his worried mind.
"He probably just couldn't sleep and was wandering the hallways,"
Louise offers, meeting my eyes and nodding. "Go with it," they say.
I do that myself sometimes when I can't sleep. I roam and roam and roam.
She's a saint, and she deserves the biggest tip in the world as she paints over the cracks I sledgehammered into the night. "I was," I lie, sludge in my chest, bile in my throat. Henry sniffles.
"When I couldn't find you, I was worried. You're always there."
"I'm here. I'll always be here," I tell him. It's a promise I can't entirely make, but I don't care. I have to believe it. I do believe it.
"I told you he'd be fine,"
Lucy pipes in as she wanders into the foyer from their room, then throws her arms around my back.
"But I was scared. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know what happened,"
Henry says, then tucks his head in the crook of my neck and burrows, a scared little animal seeking refuge in his den. I'm his den, and he couldn't find his safety. My heart craters, and it's entirely my fault. This is not a no-fault situation. There is one guilty party, and it's me, because I fell asleep in Piper's bed. I left the volume down on my phone. I missed 3 texts and a call from Louise, and I missed several more from my son. Henry.
Where are you?
Henry.
I can't find you.
Henry.
Are you okay?
I ruffle his hair, trying to keep the mood light. I'm fine, see? I'm fine. I couldn't sleep because of the jet lag, and I went to work out, and then I wandered around the hotel, I say, peeling off another layer of the lie.
And I sound like an idiot. Who wanders around a hotel because he can't sleep?
Who strolls aimlessly down the corridors because of jet lag? It would be obvious to any adult what I've been up to with my rumpled hair and morning breath. God, I probably have her scent on me. I probably smell like sex. As these thoughts collide, a pit forms in my stomach. A fucking sinkhole, and it funnels all the good feelings from last night into it. I've never thought a single parent should be handcuffed to his kids. No need to be a monk or even be home every night. I completely believe single parents should be free to date. Moving on, finding romance and falling in love again is normal and healthy. It's something I tell my clients, and I mean it, from the bottom of my black heart. But if you're going to do those things, you have to do them the goddamn responsible way. With a plan, with sitters or family booked for the night, with your phone on, with a return time, with clear details shared with those who need it. Me? I did none of that. I thought with my dick and my emotions, my wound-up, pent-up, torqued-up jealousy over a guy Piper didn't even want to get with. That was what drove me. I made irresponsible choices, and now here I am, doing something I despise. Lying to my children. I'm sorry you were worried, little man. I wasn't thinking, and I'll do a better job next time. I say, because I can't reside in this sinkhole. I might not be able to tell the truth, they don't need the truth, but I can't live in the lie. I will do better. I will improve. Henry jerks back and grins widely.
You're the best. I love you to New York and back.
I laugh and tug him in for one more hug, then set him down. I love you to London and back. He smiles at me.
Can I have scones for breakfast and jam? That sounds good, and I'm so hungry.
Just like that, he's moved on. He's over it. He rubs his belly. Give me a couple minutes to pay Louise and brush my teeth, and then we can go downstairs. Lucy claps.
I want to have tea with my breakfast scones. Then you shall have tea.
Louise chimes in. Yep, I'm nominating her for sainthood. I pay her, brush my teeth, convince Lucy to read Henry a book for 5 minutes so I can take the fastest of fast showers, and 10 minutes later, we're out the door. Henry runs down the hall.
I want to press the elevator button. It's my turn,
Lucy declares and rushes ahead of him. All is well, all is forgiven. But I don't know how to forgive myself. I'm keeping secrets from them. They don't need to know who I'm sleeping with or if I'm sleeping with anyone. But they should at least know where I am. They shouldn't have to wake up and wonder where their father is. We eat and drink tea, and when we're done, I get ready to meet the guys for golf and to hand off the kids to Piper. As we plan, she waits in the lobby, a Mary Poppins grin on her face when she sees them. She only has eyes for Henry and Lucy.
Just you wait. I have so much fun in store for you.
She waves goodbye to me with barely a word. Yeah, I'm an asshole. It's official.
Chapter 21. I'm taking a trip through time. As we wander down Cecil Court, it's as if I've stepped back into another century. This entire alley is bursting with bookshops of all kinds, from those that sell stamps and antique maps to those that peddle secondhand, rare, or children's books, and even one that purports to sell psychic literature. Can I find a book that'll predict what happens to a woman who sleeps with a man who then runs the next morning and can't even manage a single text saying a single word? Oh, wait. Who needs a book for that? I know the answer. Nothing will happen. After all, it's been 6 hours since his bat-out-of-hell exodus. And sure, I do understand your pants are on fire when you've overslept and your kids, I surmise, are calling or texting. I get that completely. But I've already shepherded them through a morning at the park, scampering up a climbing wall, down a slide, and up into the sky on swings. Incidentally, I'm a rock star at pushing a 7-year-old on a swing. Never have I ever heard a kid squeal so much as Henry did with his endless requests for again and again and higher and higher. I didn't stop. There was no cell phone gazing for me at the park. No plopping down on a bench with my e-reader as they played. I was involved every second. And when we left, I checked my phone, figuring that's when a last night was amazing and let's talk later text would have arrived. Something. Anything. Surely he could have texted me on the way to golf. Or maybe then once he arrived. Nada. Fine. In between holes? No chance. See, I don't think you're supposed to ignore a woman after you rock her world 3 times. I'm counting each orgasm because orgasm should always count. I'm deeming the first bang as 1, that fantastic tongue lashing as 2, and then the flip me to my knees and drive into me like a man on a mission that he did after going downtown as 3, especially since my last O was the hallelujah kind. We're talking the lasted for minutes variety of, oh God, oh yes, right there, God. Fine, maybe it was 1 minute, but it felt like I was coming forever. And isn't that a delightful thing to experience? Yes, delightful. Getting ignored? Not so much. I don't believe in ignoring people. And I won't ignore his children even mentally, so I shut the door on thoughts of Zach, devoting my energy to these 2 people who do know how to make a girl feel adored. Let's speak in English accents for the rest of the day, Lucy announces as we stroll down the cobblestone street. Proper accents, and we must pretend we are royalty, I add. I want to be a prince, Henry says. In your accent, Lucy chides. Taking direction well, Henry repeats in his best rendition of A Little English Boy as we wander down the street from centuries ago. I want to be a prince. And now I declare we shall visit all the bookstores, Lucy says grandly. Henry chuckles, chiming in as best he can. I declare we should read all the books. Ah, is there anything as wonderful as a kid who's embraced the written word? They are both voracious readers, and that warms every inch of my soul. And I declare we shall sniff all the books too, I add, as we amble past a store peddling antique maps. I make a note to return there after we reach our main destination. Smell them? Henry asks in his regular voice. Why would you smell a book, Piper? That's weird. Have you ever smelled a book, Sir Henry? He crinkles his nose. No. Lucy, your Royal Highness, have you ever sniffed a book? Lucy twists her lips, her forehead furrowing. I think so. Maybe in the library? I think so, and maybe aren't sufficient. We're taking a detour. With an abrupt right turn, I guide them into one of the Victorian-era shops with rare books. A man in a tweed vest and horn-rimmed glasses, who couldn't be anything but the proprietor of such a shop, greets us with a chipper, Hello? How can I help you today? Dear sir, my charges and I would be eminently grateful if you would let us sniff a few books. Would that be at all possible? He chuckles. As you wish. He directs us to the ones that smell the best, a shelf of first edition Agatha Christie hardcovers. Gently, like he's tending to a delicate bauble, he opens a book, holding it for us. Henry goes first, taking a deep inhale. Lucy's next. When it's my turn, I draw a deep breath, savoring the smell of the pages, the delicious scent of paper and thyme. When I straighten, the man says he has another one for us. He totters over to a different section, locates a Virginia Woolf, and opens it for us. This one smells the best, like words and ideas, he whispers, as if sharing a secret. And I think I'm a little bit in love with him. The kids bend forward, sniffing together. The image is so precious that my first instinct is to capture it, to remember this always. I grab my phone and snap a picture, knowing I'll cherish it, the looks on their faces, their sheer delight at the first time they've truly experienced the wondrous scent of an old book. Figuring I should probably buy the thing as a thanks, I sneak a glance at the price, and my eyes bug out. With my heart beating fast, I scan the store. There has to be something cheaper than £1,000 as a way to show my gratitude. My gaze lands on a pack of postcards by the register. Victorian-era illustrations. Ah, that'll do. I thank him profusely, and so do the kids.
You're very polite,
he says to Henry and Lucy with a bow of his head. Henry lifts his chin.
Thank you, sir. My daddy says being polite is really important.
I smile, despite my ire at Henry's father.
It absolutely is,
the man adds, then lowers his voice to a conspiratorial whisper.
Also, my brother owns the children's bookshop just across the lane. You should make sure to pop in.
We will, Lucy adds, ever the little lady today. I stuff the postcards in my purse as we exit, and when the kids scan the street and catch a glimpse of an Alice in Wonderland book next to a stuffed bunny in the window, they take off running. Slow down in the store, I shout. Sheesh, I sound like they're... I stop myself. I sound like an aunt. That's who I am. I'm an aunt, a friend, that person you trust to watch your kids. And yet, as I watch them disappear into the store, I feel like a bit of a trollop, and heavy shame takes over from anger to clobber me. I'm good enough to watch the kids, but not to text. I remember the panic and remorse in his eyes this morning. Is he ashamed of what we did? Does he feel guilty for sleeping with me? My stomach roils when I realize the possible reason. Is it because of Anna? Since I'm his first after her, does he feel like he's cheating? But I catch hold of bits and pieces of things he's said, that he's moved on, that he's no longer in love with her, and then other things like how he told me he's been wanting me for months. My belly has the audacity to stop churning and instead flip. It freaking flips with the memory of his dirty words, his ode to my body, his lust for me. His avoidance today can't be guilt over her. Is it guilt over the kids? Is that why he's gone radio silent? But maybe I'm being ridiculous. Maybe I'm expecting something when there's no real call for it. And really, what's in a text anyway? Would Virginia Woolf have required a text? I think not.